Barbara Streisand and Barry Gibb, Guilty from 1980. This is our pop culture segment here on Money FM 89.3. I'm Jason Dacey alongside Neil Humphreys in the studio. And we have Mr. Brian Frog Harris on the phone from Songland Records in Canberra, Australia, as we mark the 60th anniversary of the Bee Gees playing their first music together in suburban Australia. Brian, welcome to Money FM.
Lovely to talk to you, both of you, and all of your listeners today, and what an amazing act.
What an amazing act. And we should point out that they were born in the UK, but they moved to Australia as youngsters, and it was around 60 years ago, Brian, that they played those first concerts together, or at the, I think it was the Brisbane Speedway, where they started to really cut their teeth. They weren't even called the Bee Gees 60 years ago. Tell us what happened back then.
We could write 13 books on what happened back then, let alone the rest of their career. But yes, they sort of moved around a little bit, and then they came out here. They were born in the Isle of Man, actually, and then they lived in Manchester, England. And Neil is there. I haven't heard his voice yet.
Yes, I'm here. Yes, you're right. Manchester-born.
Okay. I feel very left out, you know, if you're not there, you know, to back me up there. And, look, they moved to a place in Queensland called Redcliffe, moved around and all that. And then, look, they just started getting their chops together and the harmony started to form. And it was a very, very long and wonderful, generally wonderful road ahead of them.
Well, it was extraordinary. You mentioned the Manchester point. They actually lived very close to where the Oasis brothers, the Gallaghers, grew up. And Noel Gallagher is a massive, huge Bee Gees fan. And I say that specifically using him as an example because, as you know, Brian, they fell out of fashion for a while, but they've had a real, and I'm pleased about this, they've had a real renaissance, probably over the last 10, 12 years or so, where there's been almost a reappreciation of how good the Bee Gees actually are. And I realised it when I went to Australia. I lived there for 5 years. Of course, you have a music show in Australia called Spicks and Specks, named after their first hit.
Yeah, in the 60s, yeah.
And I love the fact, Brian, that there is such a warm relationship still with the Aussies and the Bee Gees, because the Aussies could be very funny about stars that leave. You know this.
But very much so. But, you know, it's interesting you brought up the point about them falling out of favour as such. And while I don't disagree with you, I always wonder when you talk about that scenario as to whether they really fell out of favour with the general public or just the media, you know, the radio stations that were playing their music, because that you can never have enough legendary music, and obviously the three of them wrote some amazing songs. But I just wonder that even with the peak of the disco period, whether the general public got sick of them or whether the radio stations and to a lesser extent TV, not the TV, were doing a lot of stuff music video-wise at that time, got sick of them.
You know, Brian, you make a very good point, and I think the Bee Gees are a kind of band that go in and out of favour and fashion, and I can remember when we were kids, Brian, growing up in Australia, initially the Bee Gees weren't that cool. Although Run to Me in 1970,
they were with me.
They were with you, but Run to Me was one of my favourite songs. That was in 1972. But then, obviously, the massive breakthrough, Neil, was the disco period when Barry started using the falsetto voice from the mid-70s. Mm. And that turned these kind of uncool, you know, Aussie, British, you know, Isle of Man, whatever you want to call them, into absolute megastars. Yeah. And I can remember Brian and I met at a holiday camp in the 1970s as kids. But the year before I met Brian, it was 1978. I was at a holiday camp in the snow country of Australia called Jindabyne. Mm. And Staying Alive was playing all the time. It was the song. It was the song, Brian, back in 1978. It was recorded, I think, at the end of 77. It was the anthem of that year.
Well, there's two things with that, Brian, before you jump in. The first thing is, I can't not picture you and Jason tucked up together in a holiday camp listening to the Bee Gees. But that's the first point.
It's a vision I don't recall, but anyway.
Yeah, that's the first point. But the second point about just staying alive, and then you carry on, Brian, it was said in The Guardian recently, and the one thing I like about The Guardian, they're not sniffy about the Bee Gees at all, British newspaper, is a music journalist said that Stand Alive, it's a big statement to make, Stand Alive is the greatest dance track ever put down. And I honestly do not disagree with that. I still believe that Stand Alive is the greatest dance track ever written. You could be 5 or 105. Once that bass line kicks in, you're on that dance floor.
That's very true. One of the things with legendary dance songs like that one is that whenever you hear it, and look, we could reel off 100 other legendary classic dance tunes, but the difference with Staying Alive is that when you hear the song, you visualize the movie. You visualize, you know, John Travolta up on stage. It's one of those unique songs and that unique marrying of music and sight as well. I'm sure you've never been on the dance floor and actually not thought about John Travolta.
You have no idea how accurate you are here because I have gone...
Or flying high, I should add.
I have gone to Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, twice. And I have made my wife, there is evidence of this on social media, I have made my wife hold two mobile phones, one to record me walking down the street and the other one playing Staying Alive.
Right? Wow.
And she, I've even made her film me. She hates doing this, by the way. She has filmed me from the feet.
No surprise.
From the feet up. Yep, from the feet up. And I'm no John Travolta, let's be honest. But and because I adore the film and I adore the song. And I say this, it's one of the greatest, most memorable cinematic openings ever. And it's just a guy walking down the street holding a tin of paint. But it's
the amazing thing, you
it's
know,
the
I was
song.
Doing,
it's the song.
Just a little bit of reading on this. And a bloke called Bill Oakes, who actually supervised the soundtrack, he brought up a really good point. He said that Saturday Night Fever didn't begin the disco craze, but it prolonged it. We have to remember that there was dance music before, and that was obviously what the book was based on before the movie was actually made. So that whole scene was out there. There was great music that came out, but what Saturday Night Fever and Staying Alive and all of the other legendary songs off it did, it just took it to a completely different stratosphere.
Yeah, for sure. I think that was exactly right. But it's funny how the Bee Gees fell in and out of favour over the years, in and out of fashion. You know, of course, it was Barry, Robin and Maurice Gibb. They were the brothers. And of course, it's only, you know, obviously Barry that's still alive in his early 70s. But, you know, this is a great backstory. They were massive Beatles fans. And I'm looking with Neil in the studio. He's wearing a Beatles T-shirt here in the studio. And in 1967, he went to a club in London, Barry Gibb, and he had the, I think it was one of his friends, I'm trying to think who it was, but said, I'll introduce you to John Lennon. They went into a club and they said, I'd like you to meet Barry Gibb. And John Lennon was talking to someone else. He goes, nice to meet you. And then that was it. And Barry Gibb was absolutely destroyed by that. But then suddenly, you know, in the 70s, they're, you know, arguably the biggest band in the late 70s in the whole world, Brian. And then after that, then they went into another slump into the 80s, didn't they?
They did. And I'll say something here which some of your listeners might kind of scoff at. But I've got to tell you that if I was lining up, and I mean this very seriously, all of the Beatles music and all of the Bee Gees music, and it was a desert island scenario, I would more than likely take the Bee Gees stuff with. And I mean that really seriously, because when you listen and think about the wide ranges of music that the Bee Gees put out from the early 60s right through till, you know, effectively their last album in 2001, I just think it's amazingly... there's just such a wide scope of stuff. The Beatles were obviously, look, they're the Beatles, okay? I get all of that. But one of the things about the Beatles is that they were so legendary from a cultural aspect. When you talk about the pure music of things, there is so much stuff that the Bee Gees were responsible from in so many different styles, let alone all of the legendary songs they wrote for other people when they were out of favour.
I think you make a terrific point there, Brian. I really do. I am a Beatles obsessive. I make no secret of it. Everybody knows it, partly because of their pop cultural impact on the planet I'm fascinated by. But the point, I do agree with you. If I was taking albums, I would probably take the Beatles. But if I was taking singles, in fact, if I did a top 10 of singles, there'd be no Beatles songs in there. But there could probably be at least two Bee Gees songs. And where I think the Bee Gees surpasses the Beatles quite comfortably, and here's a bold statement, arguably any other band ever on the planet, is this. They start off in the 1950s as a novelty act, right? The Spicks and Specks comes out in the early 60s in Australia. 60s, they're a beat group. Now, this is the point that people forget. And I got to the 60s after the 70s. I got to the Bee Gees through Saturday Night Fever like most people. Mm-hmm. If you look at their songs in the late 60s, they are on a par with anything the Beatles wrote. To Love Somebody, Holiday, Massachusetts, Words, I Gotta Get a Message to You, I Started a Joke. I've Got to Get a Message to You and To Love Somebody are on a par with anything that anybody's ever written. That's the 60s. 70s, you've got the soul thing, you've got the disco, and then 80s, you've got the disco gods. mid-80s, as you correctly mentioned, they're writing number one hits for everybody, right? Right the way through the 80s. Then the 90s, they have a renaissance. For who? Boy bands. Boy bands like Boyzone.
How deep is your love?
Take That, Steps. They're all covering these songs. So they have number ones all over again with a brand new generation. Which other band, including the Beatles, are coming up with fresh material through the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and the 90s? I don't think there's ever been a band, and there won't ever be a band again like that.
No, exactly. I mean, there'll be a few people listening that will be Bee Gees fans that might happen to have the Size Isn't Everything album and Still Waters albums. They came out between 93 and 97, and they're wonderful records. There's just some amazing stuff, and as you and I have been talking about, when you compare the songs and the styles of the music they were writing at that time, and then compare that to, say, the Children of the World or Spirits Having Flown album, and then go back to the early real that pops off, or go back to, you know, the Trafalgar album or Cucumber Castle or Odessa, just an amazing legacy.
Yeah, I agree, and like Neil here in the studio, I am a bit of a Beatles freak, but I can see why you're saying what you are, Brian, about the Bee Gees. And it's interesting, you know, just recently Sir Barry Gibb has opened up about the death of his two brothers, Maurice and Robin, in an emotional TV interview. Of course, together they sold 200 million records worldwide, and he's actually spoken about his regrets on being on bad terms with each of his brothers at the times of their death. And we saw Robin Gibb passing away in 2012 after battling cancer for a number of years, while his twin brother Maurice died in 2003 due to complications of a twisted intestine. And let's not forget the younger brother, Andy Gibb, who died at the age of 30 in 1988 after battling drug addiction and depression for many years. And he was, of all of them, Brian, he was the most Australian, because I think Andy Gibb was spent the most time in Australia. He spoke with a bit of an Aussie accent because he was a baby when he went there. But, you know, just the legacy of the Bee Gees. And, you know, last week we had Neil Sedaka on the phone joining our show. We want to aim for Barry. The only surviving Bee Gee, Barry Gibb. Let's get Neil's view on that.
Well, the reason for that is I've become slightly obsessed with trying to track down Barry Gibb, and I have a personal story on this. I had the chance to meet Robin Gibb, and I turned it down.
What?
And it is to my eternal regret, and it is the most stupid, moronic story that only I could come up with. I'd interviewed him via email, so in my book that doesn't really count. He was playing in Singapore. This would have been about 2005, 2006. And if you remember, he was touring at that time. He must have gone to Australia as well. He was doing Songs of the Bee Gees with a 400-piece orchestra, and it was fantastic. It really was. He was on his own with this orchestra. And so I do an email interview, and he comes up with the lines I've heard before. Namely, and this is the thing I still can't believe, a lot of the Saturday Night Fever songs were written before they were approached by Robert Stigwood, their manager.
Wow.
Can you imagine they had half of those songs already in the
written
bank?
Wow.
And they just fit hand in glove. But that's one thing. So anyway, last minute, the guy who arranged the interview says, Neil, I got a couple of spare tickets. I don't know why. I don't know where I was, but I dragged my wife down. I mean, I took my wife to... I was wearing a tracksuit. I don't know to this day why I was wearing a tracksuit. I don't even wear tracksuits, but I was very, very scruffy. I was in trainers, and even people in the stands in the Singapore Indoor Stadium are looking at me, who is this scruffy young Moore? You know, this white guy. I get a call just after the encore, and the agent says to me, Neil, he's backstage. He's having a cup of tea or whatever. He liked the interview you did. Come back and say hello.
Oh.
And I said to my wife, I'm dressed like a bogan, you know, I'm dressed like, I can't go and see. And I turned it down.
Oh, no.
And the poor man died sort of 5 or 6 years later. So I am on a mission to meet Barry Gibb now. Whatever we do, Jason.
Yeah, we've got to meet him.
We've got to get him on this show.
Wow. Well, we're going to be playing You Win Again shortly by the Bee Gees. Just some final comments from both Neil and Brian about what the Bee Gees' legacy will be in popular music.
To me, I just think it's great that – sorry, Brian. I'll just say that I think it's great that they kind of took back their legacy while they were all still alive. I think that's very important. Even Morris, I think he died 2003. But by then, the Bee Gees renaissance was well underway. 2 years ago, 100,000 people watched Glastonbury Festival, the biggest rock festival, music festival in Britain. Barry Gibb played it with Coldplay. Complete sellout, one of the best receptions he's ever had. You know, these are not songs for a generation. They're songs for all generations. And if nothing else, I'm glad that Barry Gibb has seen it all come full circle, and he's appreciated for what he is, one of the greatest songwriters, performers of the 20th and 21st centuries.
What about you?
I think that it's one of the great tragedies of popular music that the guys died ahead of their time. Because if the three of them were still alive now, they would be acknowledged to the degree that they deserve. And look, they would have been doing world tours to massive success. And we really would have seen the perfect musical bow around their artwork. And it's just a shame that Morris and Robin died so early, because we would still be seeing them punching out amazing music, and who knows what sort of styles as well. I mean, they were so unique in what they did. They could have branched out into other styles as well.
All right, many thanks to Brian Frog Harris and to Neil Humphries as we go out with You Win Again by the Bee Gees. This was another comeback they made in 1987, and this has been our pop culture segment right here on Money FM 89.3. See you later, Brian. Thank you.
Bye.